This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It's time, kids.
Stop it. All right. If anybody's familiar with that classic, it's the Halloween 3 theme with the nothing to do with Mike Myers. There's a new Halloween movie coming out. I think it's already out already. And Sunday is Halloween. I'm not sure how you celebrate, everybody, but there's whether it's Snicker bars or Chris dressed up as the dude from the Big Lebowski because his hair is perfect for it. He's even got the sweater and what have you. So we have and then Youper's just being Youper. And our guest this evening, which we'll get to in a second, sure, talked beforehand about the Halloween connection to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and hello to from Toledo, Ohio. We also got listeners in there already, but either way, yeah, it is Halloween coming up this weekend, and I got my rare. I collect casters, as everybody knows, but this is the first one that's not baseball related in the collection. So, welcome to Tigers Radio here at MotorCityBengals.com, and of course, you can find us at the Tiger Minor League Report YouTube channel. I'm Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is Chris Brown and Youper. You'll find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. And tonight, our special guest is Clate Snowden, who informed us that he has a multimedia setup, which we'll get to in a second. But first things first, Chris. Take it away, Chris.
Hey, Clay. Thanks for joining us. Your name is Claiborne Snowden?
That is my full name. Clay's fine, though.
I just want to say that's unquestionably a badass name. Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah, so we always like to ask our first-time guests about their earliest baseball memory. So if you got something that sticks out, we'd like to hear it.
So just a little background on me. I live in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm a contributor for justbaseball.com. There's a fly going around my room. That's great. For those of you who are on radio, you get to not experience that. But justbaseball.com. Quickly, it was a website that was just created by a couple of recent Syracuse grads, and it's a really cool baseball website because it's a national website that covers every single team, unlike a lot of outlets. And they also cover trading cards, merchandise, prospects, college. It's everything baseball. So I started on there, and I do cover the Reds mostly, but I've been watching a lot of Tigers baseball. My earliest baseball memory, I remember watching really bad, like 2002 Reds teams in my basement with my brother and recording them on VHS for whatever reason. First baseball game I remember going to was, I believe it was the Dodgers at Great American Ballpark playing the Reds, in which a fan ran onto the field and right past center fielder for the Dodgers, Steve Finley, who literally just did not flinch, did not move a muscle. And this guy ran right past him. It was awesome, but yeah, that's probably the earliest memory of baseball.
I'm trying to think, those early, would that have been like Adam Dunn, and was Sean Casey still around?
Yeah, oh yeah, Adam Dunn, Sean Casey. I'm trying to think if there would be any Tiger crossovers with any of those.
Dimitri Young,
there you go. He was a little bit before then, probably.
But who's on that team, by the way, Chris, is Juan Encarnacion.
Oh yeah, there you go. I haven't heard much about him since that unfortunate news, but anyway, that's cool.
Yeah, so this multimedia setup, for those of you who do not know, I bought this $60 mic yesterday, or it got delivered yesterday, so this is the first experience with it. So if it's something absolutely terrible, you cannot hear me, that is 100% my fault.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic.
So a couple of things to get to this evening, because as we're getting out of the podcast, the San Diego Padres decided to pull a boss move and hire Bob Melvin away from the A's, which sounds in paper, because the A's right now are going through a period where they're not going to be spending a lot of money and kind of doom and gloom a little bit. But I wrote an article about that last month where the Tigers could possibly be potential trade partners. We'll get to your piece in a second. But it is a big deal, because the Padres last year underachieved quite a bit. They had a roster full of talent and just couldn't get it done. There was a lot of just finger pointing all around. The pitching just didn't seem to come together. And this Bob Melvin, I think, in my opinion, did the best he could with that roster for so long. The A's have always been limited where if they made a trade or signed somebody, they would have to, or excuse me, if they signed somebody, they would have to trade somebody in order to offset the cost. And even with the new stadium, when is that going to go into place, which they voted for it last night? Still going to be ways away. So I'll start with you, Youper. Is this a bigger deal than what it seems, or is this going to be, as you and I and Chris have talked about this before, how much does a manager impact here?
I think in a lot of respects, it's one of those moves that you see often. They had some failings with a young guy who had a rep as a player's manager. And so they're going to go the direct opposite way and go with a veteran old hand who might have the reputation of being a little tougher on the players. And that's a pretty common way to go. And it probably makes some sense in this case. Melvin's proven he can do the job a couple different places. And yeah, they have a roster in San Diego that they need to win with. They've spent a lot of cash. They've made a lot of commitments. They probably would have been mistaken to go with an unknown coin flip manager, get somebody they think is a done deal, is a pretty good guy.
What about you, Clay?
Yeah, I love the move. I don't think you'll find a Padres fan that's going to be upset about this. He's one of the best managers in the game. You combine that with a roster that looks like a roster that would go deeper into the playoffs. It did not work this year. You still have young talent. You have talent that's under team control and that are signed for multiple years. It's a win now move, and they're pushing all their chips in. I like the move. I thought it was the right time to do it as well. I've not seen a team underachieve that much, and there's some issues in the clubhouse, you could say. Of course, I'm not in the clubhouse to confirm those, but I think we saw that spill onto the field. This seems like the type of move that those issues would not happen. So overall, I like it a lot, and that Padres team is scary.
But what about you, Chris?
Yeah, I think Bob Melvin is generally considered a very good manager. He is, I was just looking it up, has the second most wins ever in Athletics history. He's got more than Tony La Russa and just a slight 2,700 behind Connie Mack. But yeah, so it was shocking to me that I didn't know if his contract was up or what was going on there, but it just seems like a good move for the Padres and it seems like a decent time to get away from the A's, as you were saying, Raj, that like they've got six tradable players or players that they may trade soon, all with a year or two left before free agency. So yeah, it could be a total makeover there in Oakland. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Melvin started out. Was he the manager of the 2001 Mariners, or was it after that? I don't remember. But I remember he started with the Mariners, and then he was with the Diamondbacks, and actually got fired and replaced by AJ Hinch.
Yeah.
And Hinch's first unsuccessful run as a manager, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, the exception of there's only two seasons where he didn't finish 500, and that was 2015 and 2016. And he's been able to, this is a guy with six postseason appearances. And of course, the one thing that stands out is no ALCS appearance with this whatsoever. And so it is what it is. And go ahead, Chris.
Oh, no, it's not as though the A's gave him all the
right
the talent in the world. I mean, they would go for it. You remember the one year that they went and traded for, was it John Lester and Jeff Samardzija? They went for it that year, and then they ran into Verlander again, I think.
It's an interesting situation because the A's have been like this, it seems like, for a good better part of the last 25, 30 years, even before then, where they just can't keep anybody. And so it's just a matter of the clicking cock situation. And if you think about this from where his standpoint, from where he started out, yeah, Josh Reddick and Josh Donaldson is your best players. Now they're elsewhere. And that's certainly going to be the case with Olsen. And just depends on where they're going to go with arbitration coming up this winter. So Connie Mack, by the way, 3,582 wins.
He managed for 50 years.
Yeah. The gentleman.
Well, when you're on the team, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and well, he was the one that invented trading players for cheaper, the high expensive players to pay the rent. So there you go.
No, I was looking. Melvin took over in Seattle. He took over for Lupinella.
Oh, okay.
In 2003, and then, yeah, was gone after one more year. But anyway, yeah, interesting news for sure. And then there was all the Tigers continue to add coaches to their staff.
Yeah, that's, and we'll start there with the Tigers in your article and based in what you've been seeing. What's been, what makes this team so interesting to you from a standpoint of where you're at in Kentucky? Just, you know your stuff. So I'm just curious. There's always the, seems, for example, we've had a podcast guest before where the Tigers were like a fad team and they were just like, oh, I like them because of X, Y, and Z. And it was, I always could admire that for somebody out of market. But in your case, what drew you to the Tigers?
Yeah, and I'm not going to act like I'm some Detroit Tigers expert or anything, but I watch a lot of baseball, and this Tigers team has certain things that you see most successful teams have. They have a good manager who's a proven winner. That's always difficult to find. They have someone like a Robbie Grossman who is just a solid vet, awesome clubhouse guy. They have young players, and they have players who I think are starting to approach either their ceiling or starting to come into their prime. That combination is right when it's time to strike. They're on that part of the rebuild where they broke it down. Now they're tearing it back, or tore it down, and now they're building it back up. And right now is the time for the Tigers, I think, to make some aggressive moves. The division is so interesting. What are the Twins going to be? We really don't know. That's a talented roster. Are they going to trade off players? Are they going to try to roll it back? Because they were a disaster this year, too. But we all know that team is better than they played. The Royals have some young, awesome talent coming up. Are they going to pan out? And I think the White Sox are a good team, but I could see that roster falling apart. They have a couple of young core stars, but some people are getting up in age. Tim Anderson will be a free agent in a few years. He's dealt with injuries. Like, we're not talking about the NL West here. This division is something that I could see the Tigers winning in the next couple of years. So, yeah, I just saw the Tigers. The more I watched them this year, April was miserable. But after that, I was watching this. Wow, they're grinding out wins. They have a pitching staff that's young and getting better and better. And they're just a couple of pieces away. And when you look at like a Candelario, that's one of my favorite players to watch on this team. And he's batting in the 3-hole, 4-hole or something. You know, he's better in the 5 or 6 hole. And that's where he's about to be batting because this roster is about to improve. And when you just think about that, you push people who shouldn't be batting 3 or 4 and you push them down the order a little bit, it makes everyone better. So, yeah, I'm very excited to watch this Tigers team over the next couple of years.
Yeah, especially because one of the things that I liked about your article was the comparison to Riley Green, Michael Brantley, who was off to a good start game 2 yesterday as the Astros draw the series 1-1 with the Atlanta Braves, which is, I know you've been rooting for the Braves the entire season for them to get here, and it is finding some surprise for them to get here. But no, I like that comparison because, or the comp, because I think that one of the things about Riley Green's swing is that it's just something like about just the way he finishes his swing, the adjustments he makes during the game, something with Brantley all the time. Brantley can take a pitch. And as a fan, as a Tiger fan, it's frustrating to watch him as a point because he grinds out at bats. And we were starting to see that a little bit down in Toledo with Green. So I did like that comp. That was, to me, a favorable comp because as a left-handed bat, you don't see too many left-handed bats up here in Detroit that have been impactful. So hopefully Green is a thing that, is for a few, or excuse me, Riley Green is a good thing to come. I couldn't know why I couldn't say it. I don't know why I couldn't say it any other way but that.
Yeah, and the thing about that, so Aram Layton, who is the founder of Just Baseball and a just brilliant baseball mind, this guy thinks baseball in a way that I've never seen, and he knows prospects. He has a prospect podcast. He was the one that made that comparison to Michael Brantley, and he has Green number 5 on his top 100, Torque at number 7, and his comparison for Torque is Nelson Cruz in terms of the bat. But yeah, so talking about that young talent coming up, they have the pitchers right now that I think will all get better. And whenever I think about looking at a roster, one thing about rookies is they're not going to come in anywhere near their ceiling, right? It's going to take a couple of years. And I always say, if you can just get your good rookies to be 5% better the next year, and the top prospects to get 10% better each year, I feel like that's reasonable. And when you think about Green, he is so young, moved up to AAA, and that's a big move. And he hit. He has such a great hit tool. Good. He's athletic. I'm hoping that he'll be a center fielder for the long term and not get moved off to a corner. I just love what I see in Riley Green. And Spencer Torkelson is just fun as hell to watch. That guy can hit a ball a mile. And I know that he was playing some third, and I think he'll be a first baseman. He was playing a lot of first too. And timeline, or what I like to talk about, is team life cycles, right? So where are you in your team life cycle? Right now, the Tigers are in the opening of the contention window, meaning their roster construction from here on, and I mentioned this in my article, should no longer include let's roll out Willy Castro for an entire season and see what we have. It doesn't need to be that anymore. You've done that for 2 years. You've played these players that have some upside, but now you know enough that it's not that I don't like a Willy Castro. It's just, okay, the team's moved on from a point where they need to rely on a Willy Castro, right? So in their team life cycle, Spencer Torkelson will take over. I think he'll come up next year, but that Miggy contract comes up in 2 years. Miggy can DH, move to the bench role, and go out on top without him having to do the Ryan Howard thing where he's playing every single day and it just is bad. So, yeah, I like where the Tigers are in their team life cycle right now. And I just think it's time. It's time to stop playing players just to see what you have. You can keep a couple of them. And I do some of them. I mentioned Harold Castro, which is, I always joke, Harold Castro is like the perfect old school baseball fans player. He's, oh man, he hates 287. Like, yeah, his on base is what, 308 or something? Like, yeah. But he's versatile. He can play several positions. Even if he's not awesome at them, he has the ability to. That means something. A lefty bat. And he puts the ball in play. You're coming off the bench and he was clutch as hell. Like, Harold Castro is a perfectly fine bench player. So, yeah, but I don't want to go down the complete rabbit hole of Harold Castro this early into the podcast.
No, we actually talked about that not long ago because it was one of those instances where you can see the value of a good manager. Where I'm looking right now, Harold Castro led the Tigers in win probability added this year. Basically, Hinch always put him in situations where what Harold Castro does, put the bat on the ball, leads to them getting wins, basically. Yeah, and so there's value in that for sure when you have other solid pieces. So he's a guy who I think will stick around. I'm not sure. That is one of the key questions now, is which one of these, or which group of these younger players do you keep around and keep giving chances, or you just move on from all of them and get bets?
And speaking as a Reds fan, someone who is often in this space of, here's some, for lack of a better term, mediocre players that are playing every day for two or three straight years, as a fan, you almost get attached to the idea of them. Like, oh, Willy Castro, I remember when he was coming up, he was supposed to be this. And mm-hmm. You don't want to let go of that because you still think in the back of your mind, he's going to reach that ceiling, because that's what you've been told, because you have false hope. When you're a bad team, and I don't want to call the Tigers a bad team, but a couple of years ago, they were a bad team.
Yeah.
All you think about is the prospects. So you fall in love with these names and these players thinking they're going to save the future. And when it push comes to shove and they don't, it's okay to move on, but it has to be an upgrade. It has to be. And it's not the most impossible thing in the world to upgrade from a lot of players that were on this roster, which, in saying that, this team was still a pretty damn good team. They weren't a bad team. And if you can just make a couple of those, I write in the article, make a splash move, add a star, and just upgrade around the edges, this Tigers team is not as bad as most people. Your average baseball fan doesn't think about the Detroit Tigers as a good baseball team. That's going to change soon.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that's very possible. I think that one of the things you mentioned, go back to Harold or Willy Castro a little bit. You're right, but he didn't even thrill us that much in the minors. He came up last year in 2020 and in 36 games, hit about 349.
Yeah, he was the MVP.
He even thrilled some of the fans. He whet their appetites in the majors for a short time, which is even worse because we knew, I think, based on a lot of the secondary numbers, that he wasn't a 349 hitter. But I don't think anybody thought he was going to be a 212 hitter like he was this year either.
Yeah.
So, but I think you're right. I think you're nailing a lot on the future of the Tigers. They're in their infancy in terms of where the rebuild is and when they're ready to start to win. If they can have a big off season this year and fill a couple of those holes, and obviously they can make those steps. But I go back, and I'm going to sound like a broken record. Last winter was where they missed an opportunity in a down market where a lot of teams weren't in on a lot of free agents. They could have had one or two more pieces in place as Green and Torkelson come to the majors. Because I also think you're right. I think they're not going to be fully formed players in this rookie year. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time. It would have been nice to add them to players who were already in place.
Yeah. And you know, it's step one. It's year one. You saw a team like Seattle that this year, and even the Giants, teams that weren't supposed to be as good as they were, take a leap. And that happens every single year. Now, when they come up and they're not phenomenal off the bat, that's okay. Like, yep. Fans need to relax. So often I see fans on Twitter saying, and what it really is, and I'm convinced of this, is that 60-game season ruined a lot of ways that fans think. Because they saw a season, doing air quotes here, and decided, oh, that's what those players are going to be. That was such a small sample size, as we saw with a Willie Castro. But I truly think Green and Torque are both pretty much like bust-proof prospects. Even if they have such a high floor. And that alone is great. And the Tigers don't have the world's deepest prospect pool right now. And I actually like a lot of their 2020 draft picks. But right now, I mean, on the Just Baseball top 100 list, which you can check that out, justbaseball.com, they have Green at 5, Torque at 7, Jackson Jobe at 35, and Dylan Dingler, who I like a lot, at 63. So they're actually higher than the MLB pipeline on Dingler. Jobe, I think, is in the 40s on MLB pipeline. Torque is 4 and Green is 7 on MLB pipeline.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned the Green, because on our MCB top 20, he was number one. And we got, I don't know if we got a lot of crap, Chris. At first, we did because, but we saw, we've been to, I think we went to over 50 minor league games this season. And the one thing that came out constant was Green's performance at Erie and Toledo. Whenever he struggled and got in the wall, he snapped back out of it and found a way to make the adjustments and just get on base. And what I like about his, showing his power and showing the ball, hitting the ball to all fields too, was the athleticism out in the outfield. And one thing about your article too that I really agreed with, and Youper and I are on the same page about this, I think you are too, Chris, the fact you mentioned adding a veteran to the bullpen, that there shouldn't be complacent with it, because if there's one thing about the 2020 season that is certain, arms are still not at 100%. We don't know what kind of shape they're in. And so I think if the Tigers to stand pat and keep the same bullpen, and don't get me wrong, the bullpen was fantastic this year. It exceeded my expectations. Chris Fetter did a great job. But if there's a veteran guy out there that can help your bullpen, I don't see why not adding another arm to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't remember the exact number, but I think injuries are up over 40% this year. And Bronson Arroyo talked about this on a Locked On Reds, that it is so hard to stay, to keep your arm going all year round. And Bronson Arroyo missed like no time in 15 years. It was unbelievable. And he talked about his techniques and his schedule that he kept. Not all baseball players, A, have the ability to do that, or B, and I don't want to sound like I'm talking negatively, but the drive and to have a set schedule every single day in the offseason. So injuries were up. The Tigers bullpen was interesting. I just think it's time for baseball fans to realize, and this is a blanket statement across the MLB, bullpens are inconsistent, one, and two, completely unpredictable. How often do you see a bullpen arm pitch amazing one year, terrible the next, amazing? Like, there's just no consistency to it. And you see these players all the time. Seattle had an entire bullpen of them. Who's this guy? Oh, he was claimed off waivers and pitched in AAA, and he's 29 years old and has 60 career innings across 5 years. Like, and he's throwing lights out. It's just not very consistent. And honestly, the bullpen takes a lot of luck. And the really established bullpen arms who are consistent are extremely expensive. So a lot of teams who are in that phase of rebuild or in the phase of opening their contention window are not going to spend $8, $10, $15 million on a bullpen arm because they have plenty of failed starters that they're turning into bullpen guys. People like an Alex Lang, right, who is, wow, what do we have here? He showed some promise at times, right? And that those are the type of players that where the Tigers are in their life cycle, those are the type of players you want out there to see what you have. Well, now, just like I said, with the position players, it's time to, I'm not saying eliminate those, especially in the bullpen, because you need 20 arms throughout the year in the bullpen, if not more. Just limit those kind of what ifs, right? You can have one or two, don't have four or five. And so, yeah, if they were able to add, and I don't like to use the term closer anymore, just because we've seen teams move away from it. The Tampa Bay Rays had 15 guys get a save this year. I think the Reds had 8. So I use high leverage pitchers. It's what I like to use. So that means you need a veteran who can come in the sixth inning in the most important spot and get 3 outs. So how the Tigers address that, I think I touched on a little bit in my article. Those kind of what if type players like the Willie Castros and stuff that have shown some, those are the type of players you can flip for a bullpen guy. I'm not saying you flip them for Josh Hader. I'm saying you can flip them for somebody who's had some good years or maybe is coming off of an injury, a guy who's a little bit more established, and so that you don't have a bullpen full of what we saw at times this year with the Tigers, where like you don't have to rely on a Drew Hutchinson to try to get big outs for you.
One thing that I'd be interested in looking at, and this is neither here nor there, but maybe it's worth a deep dive, is if teams have more success getting relievers in the offseason, or if they do better just waiting and trading for him in the middle of the season to get, oh, this guy's pitching well this year, go get him instead of, because the last time the Tigers signed a pure reliever to a free agent deal was Mark Lowe, I believe, who ended up being a disaster. And then I think they traded for K-Rod around the same time or the year, but yeah. So it's almost let them work out the kinks for the first couple of months with another team.
And this sounds like such a old school baseball statement, but the easiest way to fix a really struggling bullpen is to have a strong starting staff that can go maybe a little bit deeper so that you don't have to rely on guys in the fifth and sixth inning as often, right? And the Tigers have a couple, several young starters who had some innings limited this year, right? But Casey Mize will not be doing the 3 and 4 inning outings, I hope, going into next year. So all of that, the more successful your starters are and the deeper they can go, helps your bullpen in a way. Now, I know the way baseball's going now is you don't roll starters out there as long. But yeah, bullpens are, look around the league. Look at the Braves. Those guys who are pitching right now very well through the playoffs, the average baseball fan cannot name them. You know what I mean? They're pitching well right now. They had plenty of stretches this year. If you go through there month by month, where several of those players were just not good. And bullpens are the one thing in baseball that I have so much trouble trying to predict, trying to understand. How often do we see a 32-year-old who hasn't pitched well have a good year? Right? It just happens. And that's why it's almost more important to me to, and this happened to the Reds this year, build the rest of your team really well because the bullpen is so unpredictable. And hopefully you can make up for that. The Reds had the worst bullpen for a stretch in the beginning of the year. And they made a couple moves at the deadline. They got players that were pitching well and it helped. It's just like you said, Chris, at the deadline, if you have to now, of course, that's more than half the season where you have something bad. But that's just kind of part of it in this day and age. It's so hard.
Yeah. Ideally, you'd have a quality bullpen and you just go add, better arms, upgrade at the end. But yeah, you never know. One random thing I wanted to touch on, just going back, because I like talking about prospects too, and mentioning, you were mentioning sometimes you got to let the young guys say it's over with. And I'm wondering if you think that's what's happened with Nick Senzel. If the Reds are just done.
Oh my gosh. You've asked the wrong person to talk. I have been saying this for you. I'll put it very nicely. I am not a Nick Senzel truther. I never have been. I've watched a lot of Nick Senzel and he just cannot stay healthy. I want to be careful with how I put this, but he doesn't always seem, I'll just say a lot of injuries seem to take longer than they're supposed to get back. I just don't get it with Nick Senzel. And I'm at the point that the example, you know, I would trade Nick Senzel easily in a heartbeat. I wrote an article 2 years ago about how it was the right time to trade Nick Senzel. He's the type of guy that you get a really good bullpen arm back, because some team out there in a rebuilding stage who wants to try a guy out, and maybe that's a trade. And this is a trade you see often in, maybe it happens a lot in hockey. Here's a young prospect who's just not worked out in this system. We're going to trade him for a young prospect that's not working out in the system. Change of scenery trade, right? Right. You see it in hockey all the time. You don't see it as much in baseball, but that's the type of player that you say, we know that you're talented. We know that maybe you're just kind of got passed up on the depth chart here. A restart for you is probably what you need. We're going to go in a different direction. There's players like that on, I'm sure, every organization, right?
Yeah.
So I would be surprised if Nixon's was a Red next year. I just think you can't rely on a guy that misses almost 70% of the year in, year out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you never want to accuse somebody of being a malingerer, but they exist, guys who they might milk the injuries. And that's just what one of the interesting things about prospects to me is Senzel was a top 10 prospect in baseball for multiple years to most of the national sites. Meanwhile, Jonathan Indy, he was a top 5 pick, but was never really considered a top prospect, I think, nationally. He wasn't terribly impressive in the minors. Then he goes out this year, and it's probably going to win Rookie of the Year, basically a 4-win season. So it's just, you can never tell, man.
Yeah, in India, I watch a lot of minor league baseball, and India was the guy that I was always like, I don't see it at all. Trade him. Every single trade package included Jonathan India. And I'm happy to look like a clown now and eat crow on that, because he has been excellent. And Jonathan India was, in my opinion, the most important person on the Reds this year, because without Jonathan India, you have a massive hole at second base. They had literally no one. Mike Moustakas, who's been injured and terrible, he would have had to play second, which if anyone's seen Mike Moustakas recently, he's not exactly a second baseman. But not only that, it was the leadoff spot. The Reds have not had a solid leadoff hitter since Shin-Shu Chu, who played 1 year in Cincinnati and was awesome in the leadoff. But before that, it's been forever. So they solidified a leadoff hitter, a young, controllable player with, I think he could get 25 or 30 home runs in his prime, led the team in stolen bases, which still wasn't a lot. The Reds didn't run at all. One of the least amount of steals in the league. But a player who's productive, a player who gets on base, and a player with some speed, which is something that the Reds have not had recently at all.
Okay, how about this for a challenge trade? Who can stay healthy? Which team would benefit? Nick Senzel for Derek Hill. You talking about injuries?
Derek Hill? Derek Hill's a guy who...
You guys can have Clemens, too.
I don't want Clemens. I was talking to somebody on Twitter about Clemens. I was like, he's like, what, 25, 26-year-old. He, like, has been solid in AAA. Like, and my whole point on Clemens was the same thing I've already said, was that was a perfect example of somebody. And this person seemed very knowledgeable about the Tigers. But my thing is, you need to move past that mindset of a Cody Clemens coming up and needing a chance. No, the Tigers aren't in that spot anymore. This isn't the 114 loss Tigers anymore. You upgrade on the fringes. You bring in somebody better than a Cody Clemens. Derek Hill, though, I like Derek Hill. In my article, I lumped him in with Cameron and Victor Reyes and kind of these guys who are a dime a dozen. But Derek Hill, that defense and that speed. I remember watching a game this year when he made that catch going towards left field. Toronto?
Yeah, Toronto, yeah.
Toronto.
Yeah.
I watched that and I was like, holy. I mean, that was Billy Hamilton-esque, that catch was. It was awesome. I like Derek Hill, but like I said, in to transition some into the Tigers outfield, those are the type of players that are fine. Victor Reyes, a switch hitter who I think is never going to be more than what he's shown already. Robbie Grossman, I love Robbie Grossman, always have, but you're talking about a guy who had a career year, a guy who I would be surprised if he matched that production again. Now, I'm not saying he's going to fall off the face of the earth, but he never stole anything close to 20 bases and had 20 home runs. And he gets on base. He can bat up and down the lineup. And he's, from everything I read, just the best clubhouse guy. So I'm not saying anything, but if you look at the Tigers outfield right now, it's Badu, really young, Raw, my favorite Tiger. So I'm not going to say anything bad about him. Potentially Riley Green in center, service time manipulation. That's still a thing come next year. And Robbie Grossman. And I wrote, I think you bring in another Robbie Grossman type deal. Bring in another vet who is on a 1 or 2 year deal. Therefore, you don't have as much pressure on Green. You have someone who you don't have to rely on your Victor Reyeses of the world or Daz Camerons. And I think those players do have talent. And that's why I think those players will have a little bit of trade value if you want to improve the bullpen. And I'm not saying these are all go for it now moves for the Tigers, but those are the type of players that I personally think, if I was a Tiger fan, I would be comfortable moving on from those type of, not projects of players, but kind of players who may not have as high of a ceiling, and starting to trade for more players that can help the team now.
One of the players I wanted to ask you about in the Red system, there's two players actually that we, for whatever reason, we saw a lot of Louisville bat games this year. It seemed like, kid you not, Chris, how many, like, feel like we saw like five or six times this year or something?
We
or?
Definitely saw them at least once or twice in the extended spring or whatever it was, the alternate site.
We saw
TJ Friedel hit a home run.
I like TJ Friedel. Yeah. I like and him then, a lot.
Then he wouldn't hit one in the, I think he needed a walk-off or something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, we saw them, and we also saw them in regular games too, for whatever reason.
Yeah, it was strange. And that was one of the players I asked about, TJ, and then Jose Luis Garcia. Now it's Badio. And this is a guy who hit really well in Louisville before he came up, struggled when his call up in July. But overall, what's your impression on these two in terms of even Friedel? I think should get some more time. He hit well when he was up here, but Mario seems like he had a really good advanced approach when I saw him down in AAA.
Yeah. So TJ Friedel is somebody with a really interesting story, actually. He was an undrafted free agent, but nobody knew he was draft eligible. He would have gone like in the top five rounds, but there was some weird redshirt type situation. Nobody knew. So he was actually, I think, the highest paid undrafted free agent. So they brought him in, and he's slowly made his way up through the minors. And he's just a solid fourth outfielder. Right now, the Reds have a player on their roster named Shogo Akiyama. And Shogo was brought over in the 2019 offseason from Japan. And he's 32 years old. He's getting paid $7 or $8 million this year and next year. And he literally cannot hit. He's terrible. I like him. I actually have a Shogo Akiyama jersey, only person in America with one. But TJ Friedel could easily take his spot. He can play all outfield positions. And he just has a really solid approach at the plate. A good eye. He's patient. He's not going to hit bomb. I'm pretty sure he led the Louisville bats in home runs, which was like 13 or something, but he's not a power. He's just one of those guys who kind of sticks around. I can't think of a good comparison, but for whatever reason, the first name to come to mind was like Ben Gamel or something. He's solid. He'll stick around for several years, be good enough in the field, has some speed, gets on base at a decent clip. And you will never dislike TJ Friedel. He'll never be your favorite player, but he's just solid. Jose Barrera was actually a player who I was talking about earlier without mentioning his name. He came up in 2020 after never hitting above, I believe it was low A, or let's see, they switched the teams one. So I guess it was high A, and was thrown into the majors. He was not ready at all. And you could see he was overmatched. His swing looked choppy. It was just bad. Right. And he had 60 plate appearances, and everyone's like, this guy's a bust. Okay, relax. Right. He's never hit above high A. So he went to double A this year, absolutely tore the cover off the ball. And if you look at this guy, he's a big, strong dude. And he's playing shortstop. He gets up to triple A and just continues to hit. And my thing was, okay, the Reds need a shortstop. Kyle Farmer is a good defensive player, but he's best used as a bench bat. Utility guy. My strategy would have been, okay, what's more important? Trading your 15th overall prospect or whatever for a rental at shortstop while you're still trying to, the Reds were fighting for a playoff spot, and letting Barrero develop the rest of the year in AAA or bringing him up. And I wanted to trade for a Rojas from Miami and let him play out the year, improve shortstop position, no long-term commitment. Because Barrero at the time only had 300 plate appearances in the minors. That's not that many when last year's narrative was he wasn't ready. Okay, 300 isn't a ton. They brought him up and they didn't play him. They sat him a lot. They played him here and there. And then what did they do? Typical Reds. Let's bring a guy up and play him in a position he has never once played, center field. And I was just thinking the whole time, like, this is Nick Senzel. They brought him up, decided, oh, by the way, you haven't played center in the minors, but here you go. So he has a really good hit tool and a lot of power. I mean, he's nowhere near a finished product. I think he'll be much better next year than he was this year, but they need to give him everyday at bats. That's the thing. If you're not going to play, and this goes for any prospect, if depending on their ceiling and age, example, the Reds brought up this guy, Alejo Lopez, who was hitting like close to 400 in AAA and AA.
We saw him several times. Yeah.
Yeah. Really? Second baseman, right? Yes. One of my favorite players because he puts the ball in play. He gets on base, has a little bit of gap power, but he's 25 or 26 years old and with 1,000 plate appearances in the minors. You want to call him up and use him as a pinch hitter and on the bench, that's fine because he's probably reached about his ceiling. When you take a 22, 23-year-old who doesn't have as many plate appearances, you need to get him those reps, especially with just timing. And you talk to people across the league, they'll tell you this year, there's never been a larger gap between AAA and the MLB level. A lot of that has to do with no minor league season last year, and also it has to do with just how good these pitchers are. So it's hard for any player, and that's just a blanket statement across with prospects. And that's why I always caution people, Torkelson and Green are going to be really incredible players. They might not be really incredible players in June 2022. It might take some time, and it's going to take some growing pains, but you just have to remember, again, the team life cycle. The Tigers right now are in that beginning stage. This is when it starts to get fun. And this is when you have to start training your mind to think differently about roster construction.
Touching on that, there was one question I had. It relates to the Tigers and the Reds. The Tigers are going to be looking for a catcher this offseason. And a lot of Tigers fans. Okay, there you go. Well, so that's the thing. Tucker Barnhart has a $7.5 million team option, I believe. Do you think the Reds are going to pick it up? And if not, do you think the Tigers should target him?
Quick little, for those of you who are not as familiar with Tucker Barnhart, he's about, I want to say about 30 years old, was a switch hitter, gave up switch hitting last year, and now just hits left-handed, really good glove. Has, I think, 2 gold glove awards now. Solid vet, clubhouse loves him, the team loves him. Is he a good catcher? Yes. Is he great? No. He's reached about his ceiling. Is I think he's the type of guy that you like to have on a team. I don't think he's the type of guy that you need to be a number one. He's a number one on a team. Maybe I'm trying to think of a good example. The White Sox aren't a bad example, but a team that has a lot else in their lineup offensively, and you want a glove first guy, that's a good fit. Would he be a fit with the Tigers? And I wrote about the Tigers catching plan and kind of outlook. The Tigers got the most random production from catchers this year. Look at that list. It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Nobody, unless you follow baseball closely, play fantasy, or are a Tigers fan, you don't know who any of those guys are. And I almost forgot about the Wilson Ramos experiment this year. But would he be a good fit? I don't think Tigers fans would be upset with him. I think the Tigers should bring in a glove first guy who has experience with the pitching staff. Because right now, the most important thing from whoever plays catcher for the Detroit Tigers is developing and bringing along the young starting pitching. I don't care what you hit at this point. You want to make sure where your draft capital is invested, which is the starting pitching, and your future is relying on those arms coming through the organization. You want the best catcher for that situation. And that's why, like, Eric Haas is, like, to me, not a guy that I'm, like, all that excited about. And I know he hits home runs. I know he can play some left field. I just think that the Tigers would really benefit if they upgraded. Like I said, if I was a Tigers fan, I'd be happy with Tucker. I don't think it's earth-shattering move or anything. But, yeah, and will the Reds keep him? Originally, I thought, no way. I kept telling myself, no way. Tyler Stevenson's the future at catcher. But the more I think about it, the more I realize, okay, you need to sign a veteran backup if you're the Reds. If you get like a Yan Gomes, or I just picked the first name off the top of my head, but older guy near the end of his career, 1-2 year deal, that's probably going to cost, if you want a pretty decent one, what, $5 million, $4 million? If you want like a lower tier, $2 million, your Kurt Casale type, is it worth the extra couple millions to have a guy who knows the pitching staff, a guy that is awesome in the clubhouse, and a guy that, do you know what you have? That's where the question comes to me. And I just think that the Reds are a little bit, there's going to be several other moves that they have to make. And a lot of times GMs and owners will say, okay, if we know this guy and we know what we're getting and he has all this familiar, if we can eliminate one less hole to fill and it's going to cost maybe two extra million or something, then okay. So I would not be surprised if the Reds picked him up. Personally, I wouldn't. I would just think it's time to move on, find somebody else. But there's a reason, and I could see a situation in which the Reds pick up his option.
There is a one last question before we get you out of here. The one thing that I noticed about the what's coming up for the offseason for the Tigers is addressing the pitching staff. And I know that you talked about the Verlander angle, and today we saw that Cabrera on Instagram, people were making a story, which I'm obviously going to write about tomorrow, about Cabrera reaching out to Verlander and say, hey, come back home in Detroit. And everybody's all excited about this. But Chris and I and Youper have talked about the possibility of him staying out in L.A. because he has a house out there. The Angels would be a good fit. As the Angel, to me, the Angels are always a wild card every year because they have money. Their owner has money, but they also spend the money poorly. And in this case, I think with Verlander, they could make a case for it, or him going back to Houston. But to me, I don't, and I'm not trying to sound like a sentimental jerk, but I don't think, I think Verlander would be good if the Tigers are, let's say they're a game back in the Central in July and make a trade for him if he's at another team, for example. I don't want to see Verlander here when the Tigers are close, but I think they're a year or two, maybe even another year away from contending. But do you feel that if he did sign here, would it be that impactful right away?
I think bringing Verlander back is a great story, and every fan would love it, right? Because what is Verlander? He is one of the better players from the last great Detroit Tigers teams, right? It's a nostalgic thing. It's this guy reminds me of the last time the Tigers were good, right? And it feels good to have that guy back on the team. The last thing you want is for that to be tarnished in any way, right? You don't want your last memory of Justin Verlander being a 39-year-old coming off of Tommy John surgery, not being able to be productive. It's not that I'm doubting him. I'm just saying that is a very possible path that it could take, right? I would just hate to see him go to Detroit and be bad and lose games. And I personally, if I would not want Verlander back, simply because I don't, in any situation, I do not want to sign a 39-year-old coming off of a serious injury. I don't care how good they are. To me, it's not worth the risk. And I always said every year with Nelson Cruz, I wouldn't sign him. And he keeps hitting. And that's fine. That is there's such a small percentage of players over even 35 that continue to be good, right? So when you talk about a 39-year-old coming off of injury, if I'm the Tigers, their roster is not complete enough to have that luxury of spending money on a Justin Verlander. I would rather them, and I wrote this in the article, go after Anthony DeSclafani, Alex Wood, somebody else who's a proven vet, has had success, is not going to cost you an arm and a leg like Robbie Ray will. But get somebody who you can either bring in if you want to bring them in for 1 year, if you want to bring them in for even up to, I'd say even up to 3 years. Get a guy who's more of a middle of the cost level. I just think that's money better spent than bringing in Justin Verlander. It's just too big of a risk for a team that isn't going to make a run. And I would just hate to see him come back to Detroit, not be what he used to be, and it not go well. Next thing you have a expensive older starter who's eating innings, and you're wondering, man, did we do that for the right reasons?
Yeah, and that's where go ahead, Uper. I'm sorry.
I am on the other side of that fence. We don't have to go too deep into it. I wrote something about a month ago, and I just basically called it Justin Verlander and no regrets. I think that he was pitching so well in 2019 that coming off the Tommy John surgery doesn't scare me as much as some pitchers would. He was pitching at an extremely high level. And now he says he's feeling good. I'm just taking him at his word. I'm sure everybody coming off surgery says they feel good. Take that for what it's worth. But I think if there is a pitcher who can pitch into his 40s, he might be it. I'll take him and give everybody else almost the field. But I understand it's a risk. There's no question you're right about that, Clay. It is a big risk. But I think where I stand on that is the Tigers are in a place right now where they can take a risk because they're not going to be likely contending yet next year. But if they were to take that risk and Verlander starts coming on in the second half of the year, it will pay off. And then they have him moving forward for a couple more years as those young players establish themselves. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I'm just to play the devil's advocate to what you were saying, because I think a lot of people agree with you. I would love to see it.
Yeah. And like I said, this is more or less a rule of thumb that I go by.
Sure.
I'm a roster construction nerd. So I have certain things I just don't do. And I don't sign in my hypothetical roster construction mind. I just don't allocate money towards players that are almost 40. There's a question now. Oh, Albert Pujols, like, he's crushing lefties. Would he be a good fit for the Reds to platoon with Joey Votto? Even if he is, no. Even if he goes on next year and is incredible against lefties, still no. Like, I don't regret that. I just don't like allocating money to especially if you're a smaller market team, to older players. But it's not a bad thing to do. It's just my personal stance. But if we're finished with questions or if you have more, that's awesome. I don't want to leave here without talking about Candelario.
Well, we're not going to leave without you talk about Candelario because he was our player of the year for MSDB. But the one thing I wanted to, before we go on to Candelario, the reason why I mentioned that is because in terms of roster construction, I am almost like the Tampa Rays because I look like when a pitcher hits 30, they're gone. To a certain extent, because I give an example. I always think of growing up, I think about one of the worst contracts I've ever seen was Mike Hampton to Colorado. One of the worst contracts. And then I just saw this whole thing with just pitchers when they get to a certain age, like David Price, for example. David Price comes to mind. Tampa knew exactly what they were doing, like get rid of him right at the right time. And pitchers are never the same after the age of 30. There's exceptions to the rule. There's Max Scherzer. There's a couple things to that. But I also think of like even the Barry Zito contract. And so to me, if I'm going to construct a roster, I'm going to have young pitching. And then if I can get some more controllable pitching that's younger and build it out where they're about to get that raise and just flip them for a guy that can help me out at a cheaper rate, by all means. But as far as Candelario is concerned, to me, one of the things Chris Uper and I have witnessed this firsthand, the guy does not get, he is the Rodney Dangerfield of the Tigers in the sense that he does not get enough respect. He goes out there, he busts his ass. He has led the team in WAR now for two straight seasons, 2020 aside, the shortened sample size aside. He just gets the little things done. You look at the play. One of the big things I pointed out in my article was that the play for him to preserve Spencer Turnbull's no-hitter in Seattle. It doesn't look like a lot when you see it, but it's such a, to have that quick, to be that quick on a play like that, where you make the catch, just turn like that and just make the move to make the play, to get the out in a no-hitter, that's huge. And to me, he's just, the power numbers are there. They're starting to grow up a little bit. And he has been one of those consistent day in and day out. And I don't know why Tiger fans, there's some Tiger fans out there, like, oh, he's overrated. What? I there's one fan in particular that drives me nuts because every time I bring that up, he's like, no, he's still not that good. What are you seeing that I don't see? Am I smoking something, or what is going on?
So I love Candelaria. I really do. He's one of those players who I just don't see what there is to dislike about him. And my whole thing with it is a lot of people have the idea, and this is true to an extent, back in the day, right? If you were solid defensively up the middle, you don't really care what they hit, right? You don't have to be a good hitting shortstop as long as you could flash the glove. A lot of people now think if you're not hitting 30 home runs, you can't be a third baseman. Okay, what if your second baseman's hitting 30 home runs, a position now that you don't expect as much offense? It's a give and take. So to me, you're looking at a guy, let's see here, 27, yeah, about almost 28 years old, 3.7 WAR this year, according to Baseball Reference. This guy shot gaps. He got 42 doubles. He gets on base, hits from both sides of the plate. He's not going to win a gold glove. He's also not going to be a complete black hole over there. He's fine. I think he was a zero OAA, which is outs above average, which pretty much means he's league average. Okay, well, look at his offense. If you get league average defense, I'm taking that every day of the week. And I mentioned this already, but he's a five-hole guy, a six-hole guy on any playoff team. And I truly think that. And the interesting thing for him now is he's up for arbitration, and then he has one more year, if I remember correctly. Do you all know if that's right off the top of your heads?
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
If I'm the Tigers, I would sign him to a long-term deal. And I'm not talking 7 years or whatever. This is a guy entering his prime, in his prime, a guy that if you told me, hey, we have this guy, and I don't know what he's projected to make in arbitration. I think I actually could find it right here.
It's like five and a half or something like that.
Yeah, it looks like it's 5.5. Okay, I would give eight mil a year for 4 years or something. I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing numbers out there. But if you told me we have a really solid offensive player who's pretty decent defensively, who we don't even have to worry about that position for the next several years, I'm taking that any day of the week. I don't think his ceiling's much higher than it is now, but I don't think his floor is any lower. I think he's going to be consistent and just be a really solid player. And like I said, with the Tucker Barnhart thing, the less moves you have to make, oftentimes when you're at this point in the team life cycle, the better. So if you can have your third baseman for now, you don't have to worry about that. Torque won't have to worry about trying to learn how to be a better third baseman. He can just focus on first. That's solving multiple problems. You don't have to bat Candelario. He doesn't seem like the guy that if I'm not batting second, third, or fourth, I'm going to be upset. No, you can bat him lower in the lineup. He's just a guy that I think is criminally underrated across baseball. And if the Tigers can lock him up right now at a decent deal, I would do it in a heartbeat. Also, I don't know the Tigers minor leagues as well as you all do. But off the top of my head, who else could play third? Is Gage Workman the closest thing to someone who could play third? And he's several years away, right?
Yeah. Chris, I would go to you. I'm trying to think of, you're talking about Cody Clemens earlier. He plays primarily, they're trying him on the outfield. But in terms of third baseman, they had to go with Aurelian Rodriguez for a while. He was a career minor leaguer, and there was always this, on a Tiger Miley report account, there's always bring him up, but you also can't hit curveballs, can't hit spin. And they really have it down in Erie. I can't even think of who's down in Erie, Chris, who played third. Was it Valentin played short?
Valentin played third. You have Josh Lester playing or third a little bit. But yeah,
it was. Well, forget he's not Brady's.
And Ryan Kreidler.
Kreidler, thank you, Michael.
Yeah, okay. But it kind of makes the point. I mean, if you're struggling to find out who's at third, it says, you know, there's not a ton of options right now. And I'm just, the way I think of it is, okay, you have a guy who's not young, not old, entering his prime. If you can have that guy for several years and you don't have to worry about it. But another important thing, and this is talked a lot about in other sports as well, especially in a sport like hockey, where there's a hard cap, cost certainty. If you know exactly how much you're going to be paying a player for the next 4 years, that helps when you're looking at to improve other positions. You don't have to worry about, what's he going to make an ARB? Is this number? If there's a bunch of fluctuating numbers, cost certainty does have value when you're building a roster. You knowing exactly how much they're making, projecting that out, helps you then give other extensions to players when you know exactly how much everyone's going to make. So I think it's a good time to extend them if they just want to go through ARB or settle on a one-year deal or anything. It's not the end of the world or anything. I just think right now would be the perfect time to get a deal that works really well for both the player and team.
I completely agree with that. And if there's, like I said, there's something in the works that I'm been working on about that, because I think that for somebody, for Alavila, that's the tip of the cap, tip of the feather in the cap for a trade that he's gotten. He hasn't gotten a lot of results on his trades. Let's not kid ourselves here. But with Candelario, that is a very good return on investment. If you look out for JD Martinez, which is essentially Jose King, who is now minor league fodder for, I'm not trying to be rude, but that's just what it is. But so Clay, where can you find everything on Just Baseball? It's a great, by the way, they have a fantastic TikTok presence. It's huge.
Yeah. So they started a little bit more on Just Baseball. They started like everyone there. I'm 28. Everyone else is 23 years old, 24 years old. And the way that they started was these were just some really smart guys who graduated from Syracuse. And a lot of them were doing like play by play in the Cape Cod League. And RM Layton, and I'm going to mess up this story with exactly who it all was, but I know it was RM. And I think Peter Apple and a couple of their buddies were all like, let's start a blog. That's how I'd want it to start. And that was like not even a year ago. On opening day, they started a TikTok, which now has close to 100,000 followers. Wow. They launched the website about 3 or 4 months ago. And pretty much they reached out, like they reached out to me. I was writing for Locked On Reds. They reached out to me and said, would you like to come over here? And you can write about the Reds, but you can write about any team you want. And that's what was attractive to me. And it's honestly just taken off. And I think the reason why is because these guys literally hustle around the clock. And a lot of the national coverage, for lack of a better term, can sometimes be lazy. They cover the same teams. They don't watch as much about scouting. They're, oh, a prospect write up, their watch a little bit here and there. These guys are like, RM Layton took months to do his top 100 and watched hours of each player and literally wrote breakdowns on every single player, including the four Tigers players in the top 100. You can go read a full breakdown on that. And he's now doing top 10 for each team. So I'll nudge him to do the Tigers next. But yeah, Just Baseball is one of those things that there's about 20, 25 people now that are writing, and they're associated with Den of Geeks, which is a website that has over 10 million people that come to it a month, and they help run the operation. So it's a really legit run website. And I know that they have a podcast that's awesome, but they also, RM also does a podcast with Jeff Conine and his son, Griffin Conine, who I'm pretty sure led the minors and home runs or was right in the top few in the Marlins system. Yeah. So if you all have not checked out Just Baseball, they're on every social media platform, the podcast, but go over there. They said, and you all would like to hear this, they said that Tigers article I wrote was just getting a ton of activity, which shows, you know, that's the thing we want to do. We want to bring teams that don't get national publicity, and we want to talk about them super in depth, and we want to highlight players, and we want to cover every single team the same amount. We're so tired of the Red Sox, Dodgers, Yankees, Padres. Everyone can go to your typical websites and get that. So we're trying to specialize in, we'll cover all of that, but we're trying to specialize in even teams that don't get as much. And we know, like, the fans love it. Like, the Tigers fans reacted because they were excited to see someone talking about the Tigers and writing about the Tigers that isn't covering only the Tigers. And like I said in the beginning, I truly do believe, I'm not just saying this because I'm on this podcast, I really do think that this Tigers team has a bright future. They have, how this works is they're lucky enough to have what I think are a few bust-proof, top-notch prospects. And then, as you all know, there's going to be from their top 10 or 30 list or whatever, there's going to be some you don't expect that are good. They have an opportunity to spend some money. And I just look at that division, and I'm not nearly as scared of those teams as a lot of other divisions. So, yeah, I really appreciate you all having me on. So I'd love to come back anytime you ever want to.
I was going to say, Clay, when we do so just a little bit of background for everybody who's just coming in from the Just Baseball side of things. Chris and I started Tiger Miley Report Twitter about 3 years ago. We had a website. We took it down because we went over the Motor City Bengals because, honestly, I was maintaining four websites at the time, and I just couldn't. It's too much of a time commitment. But I admire the fact that you going to your website, and I did a lot of research on it today, just a lot of the same things. We try to cover the Tigers from a different angle because locally, sometimes it's just a layup and just discern the same old things, or there's perhaps some blogs out there that try to talk down and think they're too smart for Tiger fans. And for us, it's just going to minor league games, going to the games, watching as much. Right now, there's a monitor here, there's a monitor here. And for how much footage, Chris and I had to go, we were talking about this earlier last week about how much footage we had to go through our iPhones for the minor league stuff. And that's how much we love the game. And it's good to see, it's a refreshing approach, like the way you guys have approached not only the Tigers, but everything else, the prospect side of things. One of the few sites that had Riley Green above Spencer Torkelson because you saw the total hit tool. And to me, that's just, I admire what you guys are doing a lot. And that's just, I respect the hustle quite a bit. And to have people that care about baseball that much is a good thing. And definitely we're going to put the website link to your story in our podcast. And again, everybody check it out. JustBaseball.com. Great TikTok presence, great social media presence. And you guys are doing a really good job out there. And again, when we're having probably a round table here in a couple months or so, when we start doing our minor leagues, we'd love to have you back and talk, because you'd be read stuff too. So it's a good refreshing talk this evening.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. I really do. I'm always available. So before I go, I have one question for you all.
Okay.
Being in Michigan or Michigan State this weekend?
Hold on, Chris, go ahead and you give him your answer. Hang on, I'll be right back.
I'm a Michigan fan, but I'm also incredibly cynical and pessimistic by nature. So I expect Michigan to lose.
I am a diehard Michigan State fan. So yeah, very interesting. So I'm very much looking forward to, oh my gosh, if I knew all this, I may not have agreed to come on tonight, you know?
Listen, no, look, here's the thing. Let me explain something to you, Clay. I have had some great times partying in Michigan State. I had friends that went to Michigan State, fantastic times at North Wonders Hall when my buddy went there. Love Michigan State. I am a U of M alum, but here's the thing. U of M Dearborn, and it has my degree from Ann Arbor, but I always get the science from Ann Arbor people. Whoa, it's not from Ann Arbor. Ooh. So it drives me nuts. So I bleed blue? Absolutely. However, to me, Michigan State fans and people have been some of the most nicest, coolest people I've ever met. So trust me, I go, my brother, it's funny, my younger brother doesn't even like the color green. He went to Wayne State University in Detroit.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
I went to neither, but I went to Michigan Tech, but I root for Michigan in football. I've been disappointed that Harbaugh has never developed quarterbacks in Michigan like he did everywhere else he's been. That's always been the mystery to me. Yeah, but I'm hopeful that they can find a way to eke that out on Saturday.
Yeah. So are you a Michigan Tech hockey fan?
Oh, yeah. Went to many games.
I'm a big Michigan State hockey fan as well. So I follow that.
Very good. Play. Yeah, Michigan Tech loves their hockey. No question. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, next time we'll have to find out why you're a MSU fan from.
It's a very quick story. I'll give it to you.
All right.
I picked all of my favorite teams when I was a child. Okay.
Yeah.
What do children suck at? Decision making. So, and reasoning. Children are terrible with reasoning.
Yeah.
So I'm a Buffalo Bills fan.
All right.
Chicago Blackhawks.
Okay.
Boston they were good. Celtics. Yeah. Michigan State. Cincinnati Reds. So at this young age, everyone expects you to have phenomenal. I don't know. People are always like, why are you a fan of this? And they expect you to have this like super strong reason. Okay. When I was a kid, my dad's like friend played football for the Bills. not a great reason. A 6-year-old doesn't have good, you know, okay, good reason. Fair. So yeah, I became a Michigan State fan just because when I was young, I just liked kind of what the Spartan logo looked like. And then when I was deciding on colleges, I went to Michigan State and I was like, followed them and was like a fan, but growing up a Kentucky fan, the UK. And when I went there and visited, I just loved the campus. And I just, I don't know why I just became a Michigan State fan. I graduated from UK. I just could not afford to go to out of state college. Yeah. I think it's so funny that people always expect everyone to have these super great reasons of why as a child you made a decision.
No, yeah, my son, his favorite color is red. So right now his favorite team is the Reds. He doesn't know about anybody on the team, but he's like, all right, they're called the Reds.
Exactly. And I hope he's a Reds fan forever so he can suffer what I've suffered through.
So growing up, and my name is Brown, the Cleveland Browns were my favorite football team just because they were the Browns and they had a player named Slaughter, which I thought was sweet. But yeah, no, you're right. That's a good point. That there's, you don't need a good reason to be a fan of anybody.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, I know we've probably gone a little bit longer. I'm very long-winded when it comes to talking baseball, but I really do appreciate you all having me on tonight. It was a great discussion, and I love talking about the Tigers, and I'm excited to see what they can do this year and especially what Akil Baddoo can do, and if he can get that 5% better, if he can walk a little bit more, maybe learn how to hit a lefty at a higher clip. And it doesn't take that much for this team to be much better, in my opinion. One thing before I go, the last story, went to my first Tigers game this year in Detroit. Nice. Love the stadium. I'm going to every stadium. I went to 8 this year. I think I've been to 16 overall.
Nice.
Detroit is in up there with the top ones I've been to. It was built at the perfect time, in my opinion, where it's new enough that it's not old, but it's not so new that everything's technology and touch screens and takes away from the game. Really enjoyed Detroit. Ate Little Caesars pizza, of course. And the game I went to was Scooble on a Sunday playing Houston. Such a strong outing. And I think it was Robbie Grossman who had the sacrifice, like squeeze bunt, or did he score the run or something? It was an awesome game.
No, absolutely. I wrote a story about that game because
So that was my first experience and it was awesome. And I hope to. Like Detroit, I liked it so much, and it's only 5.5 hours away. Like, I'm thinking about making a trip every single year.
If you do come back,
let us know. Yeah.
I'll let you all know for sure.
A, I got season tickets, and B, there's other great places to eat. Besides that, there's Sicily's Pizza in Mexicatown. There's Mondo's. There's a ton of great.
Man, you're lying. There's nothing better than Little Caesars.
Hey, let me tell you this right now. Let me ask you this question before we get out of here, because I have to ask this question because you're a Cincinnati, Kentucky native. Skyline Chili, yay or nay?
I will give you a very abbreviated take on this. My opinion is if it's regional only food, it can't be that good. The cheeseburger is in every restaurant because it's great. Beignets, beignets are great. We're going to New Orleans, have to have a beignet. I've never seen a beignet in a restaurant here for a reason. So Skyline Chili is a regional food for a reason. It's fine. It's not special. I like it. I eat it when I go to the ballpark. But like I said, if it was so good, they'd be serving it everywhere, right?
That's a good point. Every it's like St. Louis pizza.
Yeah. All of these like regional food things, I just don't get it. If it was that good, we would see them everywhere.
Yeah, especially because what people fight about, like Chicago deep dish or New York style pizza or anything like that, it's just some of it's ridiculous. The reason why I asked about Skyline Chili is because my buddy I was talking about earlier swears by it. And every time I diss Skyline Chili, he gets upset. So I tried it and it's not that good. And you know what? No, Walters brings up a good point. Coney dogs. To me, if you say anything about bad Coney dogs in Detroit, you're viewed as sacrilegious. And to me, Coney dogs are slightly overrated. I said it, but there's some good Coney Islands out there that have them. I like them. I like Honey's. That's a regional thing. But next time you're in town, Clay, I kid you not, spend a whole weekend trying out some of the food out here.
I would love to, seriously.
Yeah. We'll hit me up on that. We'll talk about it again. But again, awesome time. Thank you so much for stopping by. Yeah. We're going to end the show with some segments and look forward to talking again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Thanks, Clay.
Thank you, Clay.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
There's a guest right there that I like. people that know baseball, people, like I said, Chris, we've talked about this before. People know baseball is awesome. And you can speak language like that. It's just, it's great.
It's baseball fans are baseball fans. You can talk to baseball fans. And I remember one of the dudes from the Drew and Mike podcast, their dad was hanging out talking to Matt Damon. It didn't know Matt who he was, Damon. But it was just talking to him about baseball because he's a baseball fan. And you could do that with, it doesn't matter how famous you are. If you're a baseball fan, you could just talk baseball. So no, it was great. And it was nice to see Clay and all that good stuff. I just on Coney Dogs. Like I feel like Coney Dogs aren't particularly unique. Am I wrong? It's just a chili dog with onions and mustard, right? Don't they have those everywhere?
Yeah, you maybe know, not. Let's ask the room. Like, we have some people on YouTube right now. Are Coney Dogs to you good or overrated? Like, to me, I don't understand the appeal. Like, I like them. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, I'm a chubby dude, but I just don't. In Iowa, I don't know what the hell they have down there. Outside that flying tomato pizza, which was fantastic. Iowa is known for, besides also coming ghosts. I can't say it with the same piece.
Coming you guys want the t-shirt? Get you the t-shirt.
Yes, right. I want a come and go t-shirt.
I was known for the pork tenderloin. It's basically a breaded pork sandwich.
I'll eat that.
Yeah. Gotta love that. On the Coney dog, personally, I would rather just have a hot dog and a bowl of chili. I don't need them together. I'd make my best.
You want to? Yeah, dip that sucker in there. That's fine. Like, I don't mean to disparage a Detroit classic or whatever. Yeah. I don't like it's all that unique to Detroit, but maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe nobody eats chili dogs other places, but I need to get around more.
Chili dogs notoriety outside of that damn John Mellon Cougar Camp song.
Oh, suck it down, chili dogs.
You suck it down, chili dogs. I'm going to taste freeze. God, that song is so. Every time the people overplayed song in the world. Oh, there you go. Well, Michael from Baltimore. He said
you don't necessarily have to. You could. Right. I guess it's one of those interesting things. Like, we don't eat crab up here. You can get crab up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like a staple. We don't have tons of crab food. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we just have the deep salt chili mines under Detroit.
Have you guys had that? Freddy the Pizza Man, on the guy on Twitter, have you had the pizza?
Yeah,
Is it as good as it looks? It looks amazing.
So, fun story about Freddy. I worked with him. He had a restaurant near my house growing up, and it was my first job in high school. And then his shop is about 15 minutes. Well, actually, no, sure about like 10 minutes away. His pizza is phenomenal. Freddy the Pizza Man, not the Freddy the Pizza Man. Does a really good pizza. His sandwiches. No one talks about his goulash too, but to me, I like his sandwiches. He has some really good. He has a steak or this breaded sandwich that was really good that I've had a couple times. So Freddy does good work. And honestly, it is next time you're up here at Youper, if you're out this way, I'll have to take you because. His pizza sells out so fast.
Just the pictures look amazing. It has to taste good.
Yeah, he's got the little pepperonis with the grease gets on it. And, I'm starving now, but I can't taste it. All right, so it's time for Inside the Numbers. Youper, take it away.
My two Inside the Numbers real quick are 12 and 0.956. These two numbers belong to a gentleman who is nominated, one of the finalists for the Gold Glove, Hunter Renfroe. 12 is the number of errors he's made this year, which is the highest among all right fielders. And 0.956 is his fielding percentage, which I understand all the weaknesses of fielding percentage. But I do know for an outfielder, 0.956 does not sound very good. But again, as always, he had a pretty good offensive year. And he did throw out some runners. He had 16 assists. So I have a hunch he should not win the Gold Glove, even though he got the honor of being a finalist. So we'll have to see how that rings out.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize he had made so many errors. What's this? Yeah, zero defensive runs saved in right field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it the players who vote for the Gold Gloves now? I don't know who votes for that or if it's
I'm not sure.
I don't remember. That it used to be, but yeah, people get those reputations, and it was always like you said, it used to always just be like whoever had the best offensive season was also the Gold Glove winner for some reason.
Yeah.
So let's see. All right, my inside the number. I go back to my sheet. I believe it was 130,000, which might be the highest inside the number I've ever done. but it's actually a relatively small. That is the total amount of money the Astros paid to their first three starters in the World Series this year as signing bonuses. Wow. $130,000. Framber Valdez got a $10,000 bonus at the age of 21 at the time. Jose Urquidy got $100,000, which is, tip of the scales there. He was 20 and was named Jose Luis Hernandez at the time. And then Luis Garcia got $20,000, was 19. And it's just wild. Framber Valdez got roughed up in game one. But for the season, those three guys, and win losses don't mean much, especially when you have a good team, but they went 30-17 and combined for 6.8 F4. And obviously, it's not apples to apples comparison, but comparing that to, say, Manning, Mize, and Scooble, who went 19-28 and combined for 2.9 F4 this year, and they cost the Tigers about $11.5 million to sign. There's no award for... Despite what Graham Couch was being dumb about on Twitter the other day.
Graham Couch, I feel like he just says things just to say things.
And no, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a troll. He is a troll, but, anyway.
Yeah, people don't know. He was talking about how the Dodgers didn't like their money per win or whatever. But anyway, there's no award for getting a bunch of value for not spending much money. And it is actually gross when you think about it, that the Astros have gotten these guys for such little money. They're paying them regular salaries now. But if you can do that, you have to be impressed with Houston's ability to find talent. And it, like Clay was saying, it's nice to have some financial flexibility when you can get guys like that. So I just thought it was interesting.
So speaking of the Astros, Urquidy is my inside number. That's the number two. And that is the number of wins. He's the first Mexican-born pitcher to earn multiple wins in the World Series based off his effort yesterday, which was 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs on... he allowed 2 runs on... Or six. Wow. He allowed five innings, 2 runs, 6 hits, 7 strikeouts. I should have just said that. I don't know why. Yeah, he was... Yeah, he really...
He was good.
Yeah, and Walter brought up a good point here in the YouTube, too, that... he had not pitched in a long time. And to sit that long, we've seen this happen with the Tigers in 2006 when you sit for that long and then be able to go out there and throw very well. And I thought he did a really good job. And I thought Fernando Valenzuela for sure, but Chris and I looked this up earlier. In the 1981 World Series, he just pitched one game. He won it, and then he never pitched again. He didn't pitch in the 88 World Series. And I think, and I thought about it. I was like, duh, of course, he... Basically, the Dodgers put him through the ringer. He was 250, almost 300 innings a year. And they just, that screwball does so much on your arm.
He was like 20 at the time when they're having him do that. It doesn't help.
He burned long.
Yeah, we were looking that up. I thought that was a cool stat because I was like, yeah, I thought Valenzuela, maybe even Urias. But no, for as rich of a history as.
Sorry, I just totally.
As rich of a history as Mexico has for baseball, it's not as deep as we would think. There's been some great players, but it's not like Venezuela or Dominican Republic.
Yeah, for sure. And so let's go right into the good, the bad, the ugly to wrap it up this evening. So this time around, I'll start the good and bad and the ugly this week, because for me, it's a rare opportunity to do. Mine's pretty basic in terms of what is the good, the bad, the ugly, as I pull it up here. So my good is Albert Pujols playing in the Dominican Winter League. That's good for him. Adds to his value a little bit. And to me, that's just something that for fans out there in the Dominican Republic, see a guy of his stature playing there. And also, the good also is putting in, they learned their lesson. They had put the games on MLB TV. Smart decision-making there. And then last night, randomly out of nowhere, although the camera angle, and I'm not going to complain about the camera angle, but the Arizona Fall League was streamed last night, and hopefully there's some better technology that's been taking place there. So my bad and ugly are just combined, and that's because it is something that is near to dear to Tiger fans, and some of the numbers about this place here are just flat out ugly. So it gets bad. So bad is -8, and that is the second for defensive, because the Fielding Bible Awards came out today. So I got a chance to look at the Tigers team awards. I was like, okay, you know, how did the Tigers do? So the bad was -3 for third base. We're talking about Candelario. -8 for second base. The ugly was what? I want you guys to take a guess without, I don't know if you guys know this or not. So Youper, what would you say is the worst defensive metric number for the Tigers? Position player wise.
I'm going to say I've heard some weird stats on like Derek Hill being poor this year. So I'll say center field.
Chris, what's your guess?
Shortstop, Willie Castro. I don't know. That would be Cooper
is correct. It is minus 20 as a collective in center field for the Tigers. Minus 20 as a team. They're ranked 26 at minus 35. So the worst defensive baseball team out there was. You want to take a guess on who was the worst baseball team, defensive team out there?
The Phillies.
Correct. Minus 54 as a collective. And their worst positioning was, I believe it was at third base.
Alec Bohm.
Shortstop.
Yeah, so I wasn't like me just guessing that. I wrote an article a little while back about the Tigers, like where they got their wins from this year. And I was pointing out that it seemed like the defensive stats might have been a little bit wonky, at least when calculating WAR. And that what was weird about that was that the Phillies were the worst defensive team because the Phillies and the Tigers ended up with the same team weighted runs created plus, basically the exact same offensive production this year. The Phillies had the eighth best defense according to Fangraphs, but the worst according to the Fielding Bible. So it's these defensive stats are really a bummer because they're all over the place. Hard to know.
All right. So who wants to go next?
I can go. So my good, I got a switch up a little bit. A fellow by the name of Seiya Suzuki. I don't know if you guys have read anything about him. 27-year-old Japanese outfielder who is reportedly going to be posted by the Hiroshima Carp. And if you don't know what posted means, that basically means that foreign team is making him available to sign. They will accept money to let you sign him. And this isn't like a Yu Darvish or Shohei Ohtani situation. This is a franchise player, but he is considered to be probably the best hitter to come out of Japan in the last 4 or 5 years, I think. And he's a career 315 hitter over there with 182 home runs in 899 career NPB games. And basically, since he became a regular in 2016, he's hit 300 or better every year with 25 plus home runs every season. And 2019, he won the batting title with hitting 335. He walked 103 times, hit 28 home runs, and stole 25 bases. He's also won 3 gold gloves, so he's considered a good defender too. And I think the big thing with him is he just turned 27 in August. He's basically, I think Carlos Correa is the only player, only potential free agent on the market younger than Suzuki. So, he's a right-handed hitter. So, yeah, that does take a little bit away. But in a free agent class that has some interesting names in the outfield, but not necessarily like a ton of star-level talent out there, he could be a really interesting guy to watch. And not necessarily the Tigers. I think Avila, they came out and said they're not looking at outfielders, I believe. And a big Japanese signing here would, be very unlikely. But just, I don't know. It's always good when these international stars come and try it out here. It sometimes doesn't work out so well, and other times they end up being really good. So I'm excited to see that. My Tigers' last big international signing, says Walter Briggs, who was the Tigers' last big international signing. Depends on what you mean by they spent money on the 16-year-olds in recent years. The last like non-youngster would be what, Raj? Was it Tomo? What was his name?
It would probably be Masao Kiya.
Masao Kiya, yeah, who they dressed in a kimono.
What about Brad Thomas? Australia.
Yeah. No, that's a good note. Fute Ni was not a big signing, but they did pitch. But Masao Kiya, if you get a chance, we did a story about that last year, the year before. I think Sebastian and I both covered it for Motor City Bengals. It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing.
It's the sort of thing that would be very, it would not fly now, putting your Asian pitcher in a traditional
samurai.
And there were always rumors that the Tigers were really like one of the finalists for Yoenis Cespedes, but didn't. They eventually got him, obviously. But other than that, you don't really hear them mentioned with a lot of these big guys.
Rosny Castillo, they had interest in, and thankfully they avoided that bullet.
Ooh, yeah. And you wrote about the dude who ended up going to the Padres, didn't you, last year? This was Kong? No, I don't know. But anyway, I just think it's fun. My bad, Eddie Rosario. How quickly things change. I think he was my good last week. And it's only two games, so it doesn't really it's not a huge deal, but then again, everything in the World Series is a huge deal. So far, he's just 2-for-9 with a double and 2 strikeouts. Nothing outrageous. But he did make a really bad throw in game 2. I don't know if you saw it, where he threw to third base, even though there was no one there. And it directly led, it made a 3-1 game 4-1 directly on that error. And then it let the hitter move to second, and he had eventually scored. So that turned to, you know, into 5-1. And I think for that reason, he has the worst championship win probability added of anyone in the World Series so far, at negative 2.78%. And so that is to say that his play so far has decreased Atlanta's chances of winning the World Series by 3%. And this is after his CWPA was almost 19% in the NLCS. He was so good there. So it just, that's a relatively new stat. I think Baseball References has started posting, determining how, what you do, how close that is to helping your team win at all. So I thought it was kind of interesting that it's been so bad so far.
All right. My good.
I didn't do my ugly yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad.
No, that's all right. That's fine. It's all right. I understand if you think Eddie Rosario is ugly. And this one is just going to, and I don't know, this is still a running theme all year, but it's basically the Mets search for a head of baseball operations. I hesitate to compare any organization in sports to the Detroit Lions, the absolute gold standard when it comes to being pathetic. And the Mets have done good things on the field in recent years, unlike the Lions. But man, did they just continually trip over their own feet off the field. Here, their former GM, was it Brody Van Wagenen? Would he trade away Jared Kelenic for Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz? Next GM got fired before he did anything because he was sending pictures of his junk to a reporter. And now they can't seem to get anybody to come on board. Like, they've had a dozen people named as potential, you know, front office guys, and they've all backed away. You had Theo Epstein, David Stearns, and Matt Arnold of the Brewers, Billy Beane, Scott Harris of the Giants, Peter Bindix of the Rays, Mike Gersh of the Cardinals. And then I was reading today that the owner, you know, Steve Cohen, he apparently is taking advice from Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey. So yeah, I mean, the whole thing just seems ridiculous to me. And I don't know, it's getting ugly. And Roger jokes that, like, they're going to end up with Dave Littlefield as their GM.
That's my ugly.
There you go.
Send in Al. We get a relief pitcher. We're good.
There you go. Is Jerry Blevins still alive?
It's a joke. I don't. Mets, step right up and greet. They have a great theme too. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Bring a GM to town.
All right. When they get one of the richest men in the country to be their owner, you know, you don't get rich like that by accident. It's probably pretty smart. You think that a flagship city, a franchise like that, would be able to turn it around quicker. But yeah, they're a joke so far. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So my good, we actually touched on it earlier. It was the Justin Verlander Instagram picture saying he feels good and Miguel inviting him home. So it was fun to see. It means nothing in the grand scheme. It's an Instagram post, but it was just a fun little thing to read. A nice little picture of him and his daughter. It's good to know Miguel is monitoring the situation. So it's very interesting. I talked about it. I didn't want to disagree with our guest. I hope I didn't sound like I was saying he's wrong, because I don't think he's wrong. Probably more people agree with him. But I really, in my mind, I don't think it's a big risk to put a 3-year deal in front of Verlander with an opt-out for him or something like that. I hope it happens. I hope this is one little tiny smidgen of a sign that it might happen. So we'll see. My bad. Charlie Morton felt bad. I like Charlie Morton. Big fan when he was at the Rays. Takes that shot. Tries to pitch with a broken leg, it turns out. I'm sure he probably just thought it was a bad bruise or something. He was just probably going to try to walk it off and pitch through it. But now he's done for the World Series. And if this thing gets down to game 5, game 6, and the Braves don't have Charlie Morton to toss out there, that's a problem. I think they're going to really have to make some move. I don't know who they have available. I forget who they added to the roster, but they're going to have some bullpen games coming up, and that could get ugly against the Astros lineup. Ugly. I'm sure most people saw the thing from PETA today to rename the bullpens. We're being insensitive to bulls. We have to rename it. They want the arm barn. I don't know what to say. Other than, I guess, PETA's, the people for the ethical treatment of animals, right? They must believe that any publicity is good publicity, and it's got them in the news in the baseball world for a day, right? But it was fun to come up with some other names. I came up with the outhouse because you got guys out there who want to get outs. So that's my suggestion. If we're really going to take the feelings of the Bulls into mind, and I'm not talking about Scottie Pippen.
That's funny. I think you're absolutely right about PETA. I don't think they're actually serious about this at all. I think it's them getting noticed.
And that's bored.
I actually love the name because it's so bad. If somebody else had come up with that and said, hey, he's out there in the arm barn, I think people would love it. But it's PETA like pretending to be serious about it. And so I don't think it works. But yeah, that's I'm going to call it the arm barn. I'll call it the bullpen and the arm barn.
Walter is dead on. It is just a troll thing, and every once in a while, it's just they're bored. They haven't been mentioned in a while, and this, when I used to do radio, they were in a lot of stories all the time. They don't seem like there are much stories like they used to be anymore. And it's just there was a South Park episode about PETA that just cracked me up. Anyway, but I'm not going off track, but just. Well, that between that and today, the Facebook people will make a big deal that Facebook's changing their name to Meta, and then apparently they're going to Meta because they're talking about the multiple levels of how they want to incorporate everything. And in the Robin ads, they're in the Facebook video that Mark Zuckerberg did. There's a bottle of Sweet Baby Ray sauce in the corner and like by the bookshelf, and so people are talking about that. Like, why is there a and there's a video of him talking about Mark Zuckerberg talking about Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce, and to me it's delicious, but also it is solid, but if you're gonna go with a base barbecue to kind of get yourself going, usually open pit or something homemade you make that just kind of base it on there, not as a finishing sauce technically, but I'm not gonna talk about barbecuing here. I'm not gonna lie, it's almost 11 o'clock, I'm starving, but
you can't have a barbecue anytime you want.
Yeah, we will at some point. This year with we got some gear coming up this year for 2022. We're gonna have the ability to, now that we have live streaming, I do want to incorporate I have a smoker and grill that I've not incorporated. Yes, Walter, this episode has made me hungry too, but trust me, I definitely want to talk more food about that later. Anyways, before I get too sidetracked, it was just funny how things trend on Twitter, and the PETA thing Uper was a prime example of that, but the Facebook just Sweet Baby Ray's, all of a sudden, man, now I want Sweet Baby Ray's honey mustard, which is fantastic.
You ever heard of honey mustard? Never tried that. I don't think I've tried their honey mustard.
Their honey mustard is really good. Oh,
I will, not to bring it back to PETA, but this is until I didn't realize this a couple of years ago. My family live in the Tidewater area of Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia Beach and stuff, and the PETA headquarters is in Norfolk. It's like right down the street from where my grandfather did, and my grandmother does live in a high-rise old folks home, and it's also like a mile from where the Norfolk Tides play. It's just like right there, and they have the B. Arthur Dog Park, which is fun to me.
It would be sweet to open up a barbecue place next to the PETA building.
It would be. Yeah.
On that note, this podcast, we're gonna wrap this up, and I'm gonna maybe ransack the fridge. We'll stay here, but
we did get one
question. Yes, let's get the question in quickly.
From Deadly, it seems like in the playoffs, teams are valuing the bullpen more than starting pitching. What is more important to today's game, starters or the pen? Is the answer different in the regular season than in the playoffs? So,
I think it's different. I think the bullpen. I mean, look at the Giants' no-name bullpen. That was critical for their success during the regular season. But as far as the playoffs,
I think in regular season, to get through a 162, you still need some starting pitching. You still need a guy who can get you seven innings or at least six now and then. So you're completely not burning through bullpen arms. It's only going one way. It's going less and less. I saw that question earlier, so I did take time to look it up. Four pitchers in baseball had 200 innings this year. Four. That's it. Yeah. If you had 185 innings, you're in the top 10. That number would have been laughable in 1973.
Yeah. So, the horses are going away. I think it's entirely probable that Justin Verlander is the last pitcher to ever throw 250 innings in a season. If you don't even if you count the playoffs, maybe. Yeah, okay. it's 180. I think, like you're saying, it's probably going to be the upper point soon. Yeah, I guess my initial reaction was the same. Like, I feel like starting pitching is more important in the regular season. And then once you get to the playoffs, it's the depth and variety of bullpen arms. And just the roles get changed. Starters one day become a reliever the next day and then back starting 2 days later. And it's all very, like, all hands on deck. I did look up just for fun to see. I looked up by F4 starting rotations this year, and the Astros rotation was 10th and Atlanta was 12th, but 8 of the 10 playoff teams all finished in the top 12. The only teams that didn't were Tampa, 15th because of all their relievers, and St. Louis at 21st, and St. Louis had the devil magic. That's how they got in. Best way to judge relievers, generally, I don't know if there is a great way, but if you do that, Atlanta finished 13th and Houston finished 14th. I don't know if this playoffs is going to answer anything. This time, all 10 playoff teams finished in the top 15 in bullpen war. So maybe that's our answer there, that it's the bullpen's more important to get to the playoffs. So one thing that's interesting, and I touched on win probability added earlier, a championship win probability added. But if you just go to regular win probability added, you get a lot of the same teams at the top among relievers, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Rays. But Houston is all the way down at 25th. So basically that just says that they were blowing games. And I don't know if that just was a ton of stuff that happened early in the year that kind of set them up. Because it did seem like they were a really good team all year, and they didn't quite win as many games as you might think they would. So I don't know.
Sure.
Having not paid super close attention to their bullpen, maybe that was what was going on. I don't know if they righted the ship there or not. But we can see. If they end up winning it, then maybe we can say, yeah, the bullpen isn't as important because they didn't have a great one. But if they lose and it's the bullpen that blows it, there we go. There's our answer.
The circle of Walters question real quick before we get out of here. I like Bob Melvin going to the Padres. I think that was a smart move for them to be aggressive. Like we mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but that was almost 2 hours ago now. And it's worth mentioning that I like it. I like the fact that Melvin did all he could with the A's roster in the last decade or so that he was there. And so 6 playoff appearance, you only have 2 seasons where you're under 500. To me, San Diego is a really beautiful place to live, from my understanding. And again, there's no knock on the San Francisco Bay Area or Oakland Bay Area at all, but it's San Diego, and they have a roster that's ready to go and compete in a very competitive in a division that's really tough. And you have the Dodgers, you have the Giants, and then you're not sure what the hell the Rockies are doing, but they're there in some sort of shape, way, or form. So on that note, gentlemen, any other final thoughts before we get out of here?
I just had a dumb thought about Bob Melvin having 2 first names. And I was like, how many other managers have 2 first names? And what? There's a lot if you consider like modern first names, like Aaron Boone's a first name for some people.
Really? Boone? Kevin,
yeah, Boone. Remember Boone from Lost?
I never Maybe watched not. Lost.
Man. How dare you? And then Kevin Cash. There's that one kid, Cash, whatever, Cash Money, the stupid little baseball player. Who else do we have?
I don't care if he can hit a lick.
We got Dusty Baker, Baker Mayfield. That's a first name.
Billy Martin.
Yeah, Billy Martin's a first name. Yeah, let's see what else we got. David Ross. Roberts. That's anyway. Sorry.
I'll be going to come and go for you guys this week. I'll put your order in.
Sweet.
All right. Sounds good.
I can't wait to get this.
We'll get some
go shirt.
Come and go. Come and go.
We're getting loopy here, everybody. We'll be back next week. The segments are, by the way, that's the last segments of the year. So no more segments. We go in the off-season mode next week. So there'll be some more silliness, some more. We'll be talking some definitely, hopefully, not the end of the World Series, but giving us some labor updates. Hopefully there's no lockouts, what have you. Until then, have a good week, everybody.